This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Economist Mike Dougherty says the Bloomington Normal workforce is recovering to within shouting distance of its peak 6 years ago.
It was nice to see in September, October, an increase in the labor force. And, you know, the labor force trend has been negative.
That is even though unemployment rates are up slightly. Dougherty takes us through Bloomington Normal by the numbers. Plus, John Norton talks with blues hot thang Matthew Curry about a new direction for the homegrown guitar and vocal prodigy. And Mike McCurdy and Patrick Murphy delve into seasonal giving of houseplants and how to match greenery to the recipient's ability to avoid killing the plant. All that and a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Some encouraging signs in the Bloomington Normal economy are part of the latest report to the Economic Development Council coming up tomorrow. Illinois Farm Bureau economist Mike Dougherty says unemployment continues to bounce along the beneficial bottom of the trough at 3.5 to 4%.
You know, that unemployment was up a little bit for the whole state of Illinois, and I think we were caught in that too, a slight increase, but that came along with an increase in our labor force. So, you know, that's what happens. You get down into these low unemployment numbers, 3.5%, maybe somewhere around there, and it incentivizes people to go out and look for a job. They start hearing from friends, family, hey, there are jobs out there. They go out and look, and sometimes more go out and look than what there really were jobs ready, and so they end up being registered as being quote-unquote unemployed. And so you get a little increase there. So it's not always a bad sign.
If it is possible to get to an estimate of discouraged workers, it is about that 0.5% then.
Yeah. In fact, U6, which is the measure for, they call it the discouraged workers, and it includes part-time workers who would like to be full-time. They're a big piece of that. That actually increased nationally in October. So that may be part of the story here too, which if it's true, if Bloomington Normal mimics that national figure, then we may have some workers out there who could go up to full-time work.
How do we know that the 0.5% oscillation to 3.6 to 4.1 and back and forth and back and forth is the same thing each time, whether it's people who are starting to look or whether it's some sort of seasonal variation or some sort of industry change with a different industry taking its turn?
That's a darn good question. I'd say we don't really know. You look over time, you look at what other things correlated with that fluctuation, and you take your best guess on that, you know. So
how does Bloomington Normal stack up compared to other metro areas?
You know, we're really doing on unemployment in line with Springfield, in line with Champaign-Urbana, you know, similar communities, similar in terms of size. Our unemployment rates consistently are lower than Peoria's. That's been true for many years, and lower than Decatur's. And, of course, they have a different economic structure, much greater manufacturing base than we have here. And I think that's where it shows up. And so that has continued.
How about the overall size of the workforce? What do the tea leaves tell us?
Well, it was nice to see in September, October, an increase in the labor force that was coincided with an increase in Illinois labor force. And, you know, the labor force trend has been negative across many parts of the United States, not all parts, but especially here in the Midwest, and especially here in Bloomington Normal, it's just been a continuing downward slight trend in labor force numbers. That's everybody who is employed plus those who are actively seeking employment. We saw a turnaround on that in September and October. Now, we will see that October number is a preliminary number, so you never know. There could be a revisement on that. But if it holds, then we've had an increase here, a little uptick in the fall that we haven't seen quite to this degree. It surpassed our usual fall uptick that we have. We always do have a little increase around October here.
Why?
Well, that's a good question. You know what? It's a college town. It's a little easier to explain why in the summer we might have a decrease while other communities have an increase. So maybe it's just the inverse of the fact that it's the college base here. We had this slight increase. Maybe people are also getting ready in advance for winter and getting some things done and hiring things out to be done on their homes. I'm not sure. With that increase, it brings us back up. You mentioned that, Charlie, and it's interesting that I look back over the last 10 years of numbers for Bloomington Normal, and I see that except for our really high years, which was around 2010, 2011, 2012, we're edging back up to our historic levels of labor force.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Mike Dougherty, an Illinois Farm Bureau economist, as he prepares to brief the Bloomington Normal by the Numbers luncheon. So should we take those 2010 to 2012 numbers as an aberration? I mean, at one point we thought that was the high water mark and it was great news and that would be the new base.
Yeah.
But it's not, we shouldn't count on that.
No, I guess, you know, it depends on how you want to view what's happened to our main financial industry backbone here and also manufacturing over the years, you know, between Mitsubishi and State Farm and, you know, the degree of permanence, you know, they say is what the, you know, it's the new future or whatever. You know, I still think it's a healthy target to maintain, to get back to those, if we get fully back and exceed those historic numbers.
Of 98,000?
Yeah, 98 to close to 100,000 there. But, you know, that may not be possible given, you know, how things have restructured.
Other sectors?
Well, it's sort of interesting. We did have a slight slippage in terms of sectors of the economy. This is in terms of just numbers, though, of employment. So it is not tax revenues. So the tax revenues or actual economic activity could be different than the employment numbers. But the employment numbers softened a little bit for financial activities. That includes, of course, State Farm and Country Insurance and some of those companies. And also professional and business services also softened a little bit. This is year over year.
That's an interesting downward trend for professional and business services because the overall pattern nationwide has been as financial activities have declined, professional and business services have increased because it's been a job replacement or transition from one category to the other.
Right, they outsource
a little bit. But now they're both down.
Yeah, and keeping in mind that professional and business services tend to be small, many of those people are small companies. They may operate in big, within bigger companies like even hospitals and companies like that size. But individually, you know, they are CPAs, so they're licensed professionals. They're architects, they're doctors and dentists, and anybody with a license, is my understanding, that falls in under professional business services.
So what's happening there?
You know, I really think it's just tied to the slight decrease in the financial activities. I think they're just moving together. I'm not sure how much of a lag time there might be in that professional and business services. As you think about the fact that these are licensed professionals, I would imagine things would have to be soft over a period of time for them to actually not be working or to leave the area. So it may be a lagged one of those lagged numbers.
You've already talked about manufacturing being down by about 6%. How about education and health services?
You know, that's the shining star for this area, the education and health services, so your hospitals and school employment up 1 and 2% in September and October, and that's been very consistent over time, and particularly leisure and hospitality. We've seen that over the years here now, consistently increasing, so that takes into account the hotel and conference business.
Are both those seasonal patterns, or is that seasonally adjusted?
Well, it's year over year for those months, so hopefully that would take the seasonality out of them, especially if you look back, you know, over 4 or 5 years for those same months each year.
What's going on with trade, transportation, and utilities?
You know, that's a small category in terms of total numbers for us, and it's a tough one to nail down, so I'm not quite sure what businesses might be falling into that, where we had this year-over-year decline of 4 to 5%. But, you know, when I look at the overall here, yes, we had some softening in our main, you know, if you take financial and business services, financial activities and professional business services, you're talking about 30,000 people, 32,000 people. So you're looking at about a third of our labor force. Manufacturing is very, very small. You look at a couple of these other categories, they add together, kind of balance out that those first two of financial activities and professional business services. So then comparing that kind of a wash, you might say, in the employment numbers, then looking at economic activity based on, now this goes back to July, August, and September. So it does not include October. But if you look at July, August, September economic activity and use state tax revenues as a proxy for that economic activity, so there's some qualifications there, qualifying factors. But if you look at that, overall, Bloomington Normal tax revenues were up by 1.4%. However, it shook out in terms of some softening on the labor side. We did pick up some income, or at least some increased economic activity.
There is a marked discrepancy between Bloomington and Normal. Bloomington's down by 4% and Normal's up by close to 10%, 9.5%. So what is going on there?
You know, people have talked about some of the store closings going on over at the Eastland Mall. I think, is that playing a role in that? And that's the only ones I can think of offhand that may have accounted for that decrease in the economic activity in Bloomington.
Mike Dougherty will brief a Bloomington Normal Economic Development Luncheon on the numbers tomorrow. Keynote speakers will focus on renewable energy growth. This is 89.1 and WGLT.org. Coming up is a report on the need for sexual harassment policies in K-12 schools. The information you get from Sound Ideas and the rest of GLT programming can't come to you without help. To make that case, here's a GLT Program Director Mike McCurdy.
And I'm in the studio with Melissa Leibert. This is New Contributor Day. Make your first-time contribution to pay for GLT News at WGLT.org. In a time when newsrooms everywhere are shrinking, the GLT Newsroom is expanding. With Sound Ideas, we're offering more local content than ever before. More in-depth reporting on local issues and events from the award-winning GLT Newsroom. More coverage of the arts, music, and culture.
You may be wondering how we do all this. How is GLT able to invest in strong local news when many others are slashing their local news reporting and replacing it with cheaper, easier options?
Well, the answer is simple. GLT relies on listener contributions. As a nonprofit, community-supported public radio station, GLT depends on you to help pay for the excellent local news service you demand and deserve.
Think about Sound Ideas and everything else GLT is doing to invest in local journalism. It's your financial contribution that makes it possible. So please contribute now, whether it's $10 a month or $25, whatever you can afford, do it now at GLT.org.
Sometimes it seems like the only way we can convince non-contributors to become GLT contributors is to threaten to take something away. Well, that's not a great way to operate. We want you to come forward with your first-time contribution because you want to, not because we scared you. So take advantage of the moment. We're not threatening you. We're just asking you to do the right thing. Come forward with your financial support for your public radio station. Make your first-time contribution right now.
You don't just jump into stuff. Before you join the gym, you check it out. You read all the latest reviews before you buy a product, and we get that. You've listened to GLT. You've used our website. You follow us on social media. Now's the time to become a contributor.
Yep, do that right now at WGLT.org. You rely on our news programming, enjoy our weekend blues, and make a point of tuning in for Radiolab and on the media. You follow us on social media and NPR One. You've listened to more than one of these fund drives, so you know what it takes to make GLT possible. We think you've done all the research you need to at this point. It's time to become a contributing listener.
GLT makes a real difference in your life. Make sure we're here for you. We want to keep you in touch and involved and engaged. Make a real difference for GLT with a first-time contribution. And you can do that by going to our website, WGLT.org, right now. Maybe you don't contribute because you think public media is free. All you need to do is check on the radio, visit the website, turn on NPR One, and there we are. But public media isn't free. You pay for public media by contributing whatever you can to keep the programs you like on the air and the website there when you need it. GLT isn't free. Pay for your fair share with your first-time contribution now. Help us out.
Feels free, but it isn't. It's also not cheap. GLT reporters need more than microphones and a digital recorder. There's transportation, wire services, computers, production studios, engineering support. They're all essential to GLT's award-winning local news operation.
Covering our community is expensive, but with your help, we can stay on the beat, bring you the local news, conversations, and features you need and expect. You can support your local news with a contribution, $10 a month, $25, whatever you can afford.
WGLT.org is where you can go to make your contribution. And we've got a deal for you. Set up an ongoing contribution of $10 a month or more, and we'll thank you with your very own pair of GLT socks. You can see those at WGLT.org when you make your contribution. And thanks.
Support for GLT comes from the Illinois Prairie Community Foundation, making an impact one grant at a time, supporting arts and culture, youth engagement, employment, career development, and more. More information about the impact you could have at ilprairiecf.org. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. A new report says Illinois needs comprehensive guidelines to deal with sexual misconduct cases in K through 12 schools. Wendy Pollack heads the Women's Law and Policy Initiative of the Sergeant Shriver National Center on Poverty Law and wrote the report. Illinois Newsroom's Rachel Otwell spoke with Pollack to learn more about her findings.
What's important is to be clear to students and parents and guardians and faculty what the school will do. The point is that there needs to be clear, transparent, written policies so everybody understands what the process is, what the procedure is, how the students' information will be handled in a confidential manner. This is a problem throughout the state. We know that, and that's what this report addresses. It's not just the Chicago Public Schools problem. It's throughout the state. And what our report showed, we had focus groups and one-on-one interviews with both students and service providers and some in-school social workers around the state, in every part of the state. And this is a problem. And the lack of these written policies, lack of any kind of real protocol, that when a school actually did an okay job, it was more because there was just someone in the know, kind of a luck of the draw kind of thing, not because there was policies and protocols in place that would really protect the students.
And we're hearing on the federal level about proposed changes to Title IX implementation. Title IX is meant to prevent gender discrimination in schools, including primary and high schools, which actually ends up meaning a lot of different things. Any thoughts on how those possible changes could affect what we're talking about?
The proposed regulations are not good. They really roll back some of the protections that the survivors have now. So, for example, schools wouldn't be obligated to really do anything for students if the violence happened off campus. And the reality is, while there's unfortunately a large number of on-campus incidents, the majority of incidents actually happen off campus. If you're talking about the college level, you could have something happen at a frat party between students and the school doesn't have responsibility. So there's lots of things in the proposed regulations that are really not good. So what I would hope is that here in Illinois and in other states that we step up and not let those kinds of things happen, because the reality is whether or not the violence lives up to any kind of legal definition to prove a case in court, the reality is this incident happened. The survivor is often traumatized and needs help both in terms of counseling and in terms of being able to stay in school and complete their education successfully.
I'm Rachel Otwell, and I'm speaking with Wendy Pollack, who heads the Women's Law and Policy Initiative of the Sergeant Shriver National Center on Poverty Law in Chicago. She helped author a report just out that details the accounts of students in K-12 schools in Illinois who have dealt with sexual harassment and assault. She suggested I also call up Elisa Hill, now a student at Northern Illinois University. Hill says she went to a Chicago high school and had an inappropriate experience with a teacher during her time there. We're going to listen now to some more of what she had to say.
I was in his office by myself. I think we were discussing my detention. At the time, I was working at a restaurant in a suburb outside of Chicago. And I knew I couldn't serve the detention because I needed to go to work. So I indicated to him that, is there any way that I can serve this detention another day? I really can't afford to miss work. He began to question my work. And, he told me, I want to come to your job. I want to see you. I want you to serve me. I don't live too far from there. What is your number? I was just shocked at this was taking place.
Hill says she went to an administrator with other female students who had said the teacher had been inappropriate with them, and within days, he was gone from the school. But Hill says no one followed up with her, and she was worried he might come after her.
I really just want to know, where is he, and how can I, as a survivor, move on from this knowing that proper decisions were made to ensure that this person won't ever do this destruction again.
Hill says the experience has inspired her to be an advocate for sexual harassment and abuse survivors. And so back to the report, it mentions what's happened in the wake of Me Too, a movement that some would say is still ongoing, and how this has created more public conversations and policies, in some cases, addressing sexual violence. But you talk about the lack of attention when it comes to children.
There's a lot of challenges when it comes to children and youth. So that's why we have focused for so many years on elementary and secondary students, because there's never been much attention paid to that group. This is a problem that's existed probably forever. Even with the Me Too movement, and we're talking about adults, there's a lot of victim blaming and there's a lot of just not believing people. And I think that that is exacerbated for children and youth.
And so the report identifies a few themes in particular that I take it were reoccurring issues that came up in your interviews. One had to do with confidentiality. Tell us about your findings regarding that.
I mean, this is a real problem, and it really will discourage anybody from coming forward. I mean, the students have stories from they're aware that teachers are talking about it amongst themselves, and it becomes obvious. You know, we even had an example of teachers coming up to a student asking her how she was. You know, for those who pay attention of what's happened at the Chicago schools, they have now set up this hotline for people to report, you know, gender-based violence, and they had 600 reports, and people were like, wow, that's 600 reports. There's more than 600 schools in Chicago Public Schools. I mean, that's like less than one call per school. To me, there should be thousands more. So if you have a system where people, survivors, feel comfortable coming forward, they'll come forward. And now what we have to see is if the system they build is really something that will protect the students' confidentiality, really be a help to them and not a hindrance to their educational development. For gender-based violence survivors, we often talk about safety plans. What students need are safety plans plus education plans. So, you know, we've called them in the past student success plans. It's like, what is needed to keep someone safe? So if it's making sure they're not in the same class, what I've seen, particularly in smaller, more rural areas and smaller towns, is a lot of what I call involuntary homeschooling going on, which means that the parents felt like they had no choice but to take their child out of school because the school administrators were just not doing anything. They felt that their child's safety was at risk. And I remember even talking to a parent who had to take not just the survivor, the student had been sexually assaulted, out of school, but had to take her siblings out of school too because they were being bullied because of what was going on. I think there needs to be more leeway in transferring schools. That's often difficult in, you know, more rural areas of the state, but there has to be a way to make sure that the survivors can stay in school and be safe.
That's Rachel Odwell speaking with Chicago's Shriver Center's Wendy Pollack. For more about their report on how schools support or fail to support sexual assault survivors in K-12 schools in the state, head to IllinoisNewsroom.org. You're listening to Bloomington Normal's only locally owned and operated broadcast media outlet. Still to come on Sound Ideas is GLT's Grow. This is the Wintertime Fund Drive, and with us are Mike McCurdy and Melissa Liebert.
It's year-end fund drive, Charlie's right, and we need you and your first-time contribution. There's a constant conversation going on here at GLT, and every day we're asking ourselves, what will we explore today, what's on Sound Ideas, and what's coming in the weeks ahead?
Well, once we decide what's worth your time and attention, the newsroom gets to work. They find the experts every day. They find everyday people to illuminate the topics that they want to cover. They spend hours researching, editing, and producing reports on local issues and events that matter to you. You've told us you appreciate the results. You value the stories and interviews you hear on Sound Ideas. You've gone out of your way to thank us for helping you better understand local issues. And we're glad to hear it. After all, you are who we are working for.
So please make sure we can keep working for you. Make your contribution, whether it's $10 a month, $25, whatever you can afford, for Sound Ideas and all that you appreciate from GLT. On our website right now, WGLT.org, you have every reason to support us. You're listening right now, you use the website, you follow us on social media. And the expenses add up. Whatever you can afford to help pay is much appreciated. And if you find the time to listen and browse our website, you can find the time to contribute.
You can contribute at WGLT.org. News happens every day. GLT reporters schedule interviews with newsmakers and prepare questions for those newsmakers every day. But the most important newsmakers aren't those being interviewed by Charlie Schlinker, Ryan Denham, Eric Stock, or Mary Cullen. The most important newsmaker is you.
50% of GLT's budget comes from local sources, whether that's user dollars, and you can make up the news when you contribute. You can't make up the news, but you can make up the budget when you help contribute to pay for the services that you use without contributions from users like you. Our computers don't get upgraded. Our equipment doesn't get replaced. And we need all the help we can get to make sure we can keep transmitting the news to you.
Your first-time contribution or your renewal helps make the news happen. Without listeners willing to help pay for news on GLT, it wouldn't happen. Become a newsmaker right now. Click on donate at WGLT.org. Now, when you contribute, you get to decide how much you want to pay. You can choose Visa, MasterCard, Discover, or American Express. You can ask to be billed. You can make a one-time contribution. Or you could even set up an ongoing monthly contribution.
We have electronic funds transfer options. You can have the money deducted automatically from your account every month. No hassle, no paper, no mail. And you decide what to pay. Browse all the payment options, and when you click, you can do so at WGLT.org/donate.
Every day you learn something new with Sound Ideas on GLT. It might be a deeper understanding of an issue you're already interested in, or it might be an introduction to an idea or a person you've never encountered before. Maybe it's just something as simple as how to buy a houseplant and who you should get that houseplant for, which you'll hear coming up on Grow. Today you need to learn one more thing. This essential source of information and inspiration depends on financial support from listeners, and that means you. So please give what you can now.
Don't put off your contribution. Procrastination leads to trouble. Life gets crazy and important stuff can get in the way. Don't put it off and give at WGLT.org.
So take advantage of the moment and give online, putting that done check mark next to doing your part for your public radio station. It's going to feel great, so do it now. Now, there are a lot of answers to the question, what is Sound Ideas? Well, it's the show you're listening to right now. It's where state, regional, and national newsmakers stop by.
Exactly. It's where you stay up to date on issues and events that impact our community every day. It's where you connect with local artists, writers, musicians. It's the flagship GLT news program. It occupies a lot of thought and time to prepare. And you're saying things like, the show is great. That recent episode really had me talking. Great interviews all the time.
If compliments were cash, we wouldn't be on the air asking for more money. Running a public radio station is expensive. We're only asking you to take a small piece of one show. Help support Sound Ideas on GLT with your contribution right now.
Support for GLT comes from Vitesse Cycles Shop, where your patronage and friendship is valued. Vitesse Cycles' goal is to promote health and well-being through cycling. Learn more about the Electra Townie and other bike brands, all with Vitesse's professional advice, service, and accessories at VitesseCycle.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Giving a houseplant as a gift raises a number of questions, such as what kind of plant to give? Is the person receiving it even capable of caring for the plant? Illinois State University's Patrick Murphy has answers to those and other questions from GLT's Mike McCurdy in this episode of our gardening podcast, Grow.
It's the giving season, but plants are often gifted all year to commemorate a birth, a death, a new house, or a new job. So what makes a good houseplant, and what should you consider? I'm Mike McCurdy. This is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice from our expert, Patrick Murphy, from Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences and curator of the Fell Arboretum. How are you doing, Murph?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing really great. So before we decide to give a plant, do we need to think about the person receiving that plant, whether they have a brown thumb or a green thumb?
I think we do, you know, and sometimes that gets overlooked in the rush of what kind of plant to get, but hopefully our discussion will help.
And sometimes cut flowers are best. So again, this would be a decision driven by who's receiving the plant or the flowers.
That's right, because out of all the plant gifts that one could give, I would say cut flowers are the easiest to maintain. You can get a week or maybe 10 days out of them just by changing the water and using the little packet that they give you when you buy the flowers.
What's in the packet?
It's like liquid fertilizer.
And then, so what are some things we need to check off when it comes to deciding what kind of plant to give a particular person?
Well, we need to keep in mind, what are they going to do with it? Are they going to be able to take it home? Are they are they in a position to take care of it at all, you know? And a lot of the plants, they have a range of maintenance or attention that they require, some more than others.
Most of them, though, since they're going to be in the house, are fairly low maintenance. Is that accurate?
That is accurate in spirit. That's right.
In spirit. All right, so let's talk about some specific types of plants. What are the kinds of plants that we're likely to see on the shelf when it comes time to buy one to give as a gift?
I'm a big fan of the art and craft of bonsai, so we're going to start with that. And good news is that there are a lot of them available for sale during the Christmas holidays, and they come back again around Mother's Day when that kind of stuff is popular. But they're the most maintenance intensive. They require the most amount of attention.
And is that the pruning of this plant to make it look like a tiny tree or...
Well, that is a small part of actually having the bonsai. It's what you should know is that the bonsai are trained to grow in a dwarf fashion by living on a restricted root, with restricted root growth and root development. So a lot of times you see the bonsai as this oversized plant, or what appears to be oversized, in a very small pot. And a lot of the ones that are retail sales items, they are the most common that people associate with bonsai. So there's some kind of conifer, like a pine or a juniper or a cypress, which are outdoor plants. That's the problem. So they've glued the gravel on them. They're the little decoration, the moss and stuff, is all glued to the top of the pot. That's to prevent it from coming loose during shipping and handling. And when you water a bonsai pot, you should submerge it in water rather than pour the water in from the top. So see, we're already getting into a long list of stuff that's right out of the owner's manual, and that's the hardest stuff to do for a lot of people.
I always thought orchids were fickle and sort of touchy.
They are. They are. And my wife and I received an orchid as a gift, and I have repotted it in the same pot that it came in. But it is suffering. It has been hard to keep it because they don't like the dry air that comes from the heating of the home. No matter where I put the thing, the leaves start to yellow, and they like to go dry between waterings, you know, so they're very particular in that regard.
You have a window in the bathroom?
We have a east-facing window,
but we
don't have any bathroom windows.
Okay, I was going to say, I mean, that might give it the humidity it needs.
Right, right. Another way, Mike, to get the humidity is to have a tray full of pebbles, and then you put water in there, and then the pot's set on top of the pebbles. And then when the water evaporates, it gives those plants in close proximity some extra humidity.
So on the flip side, well, it likes to go dry between waterings as well. Then you have plants that need very little water, like cactus.
The cacti and the succulents, they're kind of next to each other on the list. They require less water, of course, and lots of light. And Christmas cactus are the easiest ones to take care of. I've seen Christmas cactus live in the nursery liner for years. And the succulents are things like agave and sedums and jade. They like a little more light, and you want to let those dry between waterings. And they're actually fairly easy to manage. You don't have to go out and find special soil for them necessarily. Cacti, orchids, and the bonsai, you sometimes have to have special soil. You just can't use what you've got left over.
Needs lots of drainage.
And it needs a coarse, the orchids like a coarser type of soil mix.
So with the succulents, what I found through trial and error, and it's ridiculous because I should have figured it out a long time ago, is I was just watering them too much. The more I leave the succulents alone that I have, the better they do.
Yeah, I've had that experience where we gave my mother-in-law, Mary Ann, we gave her a fiddle leaf fig, Ficus lyrata. And in appreciation for receiving the gift, it was adopted into the house with lots of love and everything and a little too much water. And it started showing it right away on your tropical houseplants, which we're going to talk more about. When you see browning and blackening on the foliage, you got too much water.
And that was my problem. I thought, oh, well, it needs more water, right? It's having an issue. And actually, I was overwatering them. We bring our succulents in from outside. They spend spring and summer and most of fall outside. We bring them in for the winter, put them in east-facing windows, and I water them in February. I mean,
right. That's
it, right? I water them once over the winter.
Right, and they're really popular in interior decor now. The low troughs that are sometimes oversized, kind of a low flat centerpiece that you can see over the top of so you can speak with and serve your guests.
So tropicals?
Tropicals, they require varying levels of attention. And most do not like the dry air from the heating, just like the other plants. Some tough proven performers are things like Sansevieria, a common name known as the mother-in-law's tongue, poinsettias. They're very popular during the Christmas holiday, as they should be. They both like to dry between waterings. And one thing about the poinsettias and a lot of gift plants, they come with the foil, you know, mm-hmm. and the foil kind of keeps the water from leaking out onto the carpet or whatever. But it's not necessarily a positive for keeping the plant long term. You want to kind of start thinking about repotting the tropical plants that you receive as a gift after you've had them for, say, a couple weeks up to a month.
And since we're talking about poinsettias, I guess we should talk about dogs, cats, other pets, children, and plants, and whether some of these plants are safe to be around animals and kids.
Yeah, there's some of the obvious hazards with things like cacti, right? They got the dog's little nose or the cat's little nose can get the quills in them really easy, and then you got to pluck them out with the nose hair tweezers.
Or little Jimmy's thumb.
Little Jimmy's thumb. Hey, I said don't touch that. And then, yeah, right. And there is a milky sap that you can see if you break a leaf off of poinsettia. It's toxic to everybody, but particularly the pets.
So when receiving the plant, should the recipient assume it's good to go for a while, or should they inspect it in some way, for instance, making sure it doesn't need to be repotted right away?
Yeah, a lot of these plants, when you receive them as a gift, are in a nursery liner type of pot with a very light soil mix, and this is intentional to reduce the weight for freight and handling, and it also is conducive to getting vigorous new growth during production, and sometimes there are more roots than soil in the pots, and the short soil productivity life is a result of that. So a lot of times you can repot right back into the same pot just by adding some newer soil or some more improved soil.
And a tree is kind of a big deal. You could gift a tree. I think it's a great idea, but you really need to talk to the person who's receiving this tree.
Yeah, and I don't think now is the season, but I wanted to include that because we're all big tree lovers here at Illinois State University and the Fell Arboretum. But it is a long-lasting gift.
Decades.
And, that's right, and it's a generational type gift.
If you have any questions about houseplants or anything in nature or gardening, submit them at wglt.org/grow. Next week, we'll talk about the frozen ground, something I didn't think we had to even consider, Patrick.
It's important here in the Midwest.
That's Patrick Murphy. I'm Mike McCurdy. Send your gardening questions to wglt.org/grow.
Find this and other GLT podcasts at wglt.org. Coming up, John Norton reports on changes in direction for homegrown blues artist Matthew Curry ahead of his next concert in Bloomington. Melissa Leibert and Mike McCurdy are here to ask for your help.
It's New Contributor Day here at GLT. You can become a financial contributor at WGLT.org. If you've never given before, please know that GLT is here for you because someone else already took that first step from being a listener to a listener contributor.
Individual contributions from thousands of users give GLT the money we need to pay for the programs you rely on, and right now we're asking you to join them by making a contribution of your very own.
Your contribution will not only help pay for the hundreds of hours you listen to GLT throughout the year, it will also help ensure that programs such as Sound Ideas are here for the next person to discover, that WGLT.org is up to date with the articles you want. Make your first-time contribution right now at WGLT.org.
Any contribution in any amount is awesome and appreciated. Plus, there are all kinds of payment options, including credit cards, electronic fund transfers. You can make a one-time contribution, or you can set up ongoing monthly contributions. It's your choice. Just go to WGLT.org and click on Donate.
Thank you to everyone who contributes to GLT. We appreciate your willingness to take responsibility for the news and ideas you get here. GLT wouldn't exist without listener support.
And to those of you who just listen or browse the website but don't contribute, it's time you got on board with us and with the whole idea of public media, that you understand there is no GLT without contributions. Your contribution at any amount helps pay for the programs you rely on. And we want to thank all of our contributing listeners and everyone who does get it. We need more people to join the party.
Now, if you've never contributed before, you're probably wondering just how you should give. The answer is whatever amount you can. Some people contribute $25 a year. Some people contribute $25 a month. Every contribution, no matter how much, helps pay for the GLT and NPR programs you depend on. So don't worry, just give what you can. Click on donate at WGLT.org. Now, we know you discover something fresh and new every day on GLT. We bring you in-depth news, of course, but you also hear unexpected stories and portraits of interesting people and places you might not run into otherwise.
And during this fund drive, we're asking everyone who's never contributed to GLT to do some thinking and make sure you're contributing. Think about how much you use GLT and how much the station means to you. And think about all the times you've heard us explain how important your financial support is. Contribute now at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Guitarist, singer-songwriter Matthew Curry is evolving his sound as he incorporates new artists into his listening repertoire. Ahead of his annual December show at the Castle Theater this Saturday, Curry stopped by the GLT studios to show off new songs to John Norton. The now 23-year-old Bloomington High School grad has been digging into Americana and country music from the likes of Jason Isbell and Merle Haggard.
It's really interesting to kind of just step back from sort of my comfort zone and listen to stuff that I never thought that I would get really heavy into, but turns out I did.
Well, let's get at some of those songs. You are nice enough to give us a preview of some of the songs that'll be on an upcoming album.
Mm-hmm.
So are you looking at what, sometime next year, 2019?
It's hard to say.
Let's hope so.
I'm chomping at the bit to release it because we have the six I sent you, and then, you know, I don't know which ones you decided on that you'd want to.
Well, let's get
play,
to some of them then. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Let's play The Great Midwest. You previewed this last year when you were here. You played it in studio, acoustic.
Yeah, I listened back and sounded, I was like, man, I sounded rough. That was early in the morning for a musician.
Well,
man.
Let's just play this. It references the Mackinac River. It references your late father in this song. Let's play just a little bit of
cool.
it.
Cool.
As the sun hits the horizon and yields the light of the moon, my mind takes me back in time to a lazy afternoon on the banks of the Mackinac.
Does traveling so much around the country, does it sort of center you in the Midwest in a way?
Yeah. Man, I love to, just like any true, I guess what we call a road dog, or, you know, like anybody that really loves playing music on the road, I love to travel and see all the different places and get to experience, you know, driving through the mountains or through the Everglades. You know, it's always cool just to see that stuff, but Bloomington and the Midwest is home and probably always will be.
What's your favorite part of the Mackinac?
This is actually an interesting story. This place we call Polka Dot Beach because it's the first, when my brother Andrew and I were maybe anywhere between 7 and 10, maybe younger, I can't remember.
And for our listeners who don't know, it's Matthew's twin brother, Andrew.
Yeah, and my dad took us on our first river camping trip to this spot, and it overlooks this real beautiful bluff, and that was our very first camp trip with just my brother, myself, and my dad, and we found a little soft-shell turtle with, you know, polka dots on its back. So from then on, it was Polka Dot Beach, and always remember my dad saying, whenever I die, I want my ashes spread on the Mackinac. Maybe a year or so after he passed away, we there at Polka Dot Beach, that's where he stays. So every time we go camping, that's where we camp and,
so you're camping
and pour a beer out for him. And
as I threw in the line, almost heard my daddy call, son, you get back sometime. Things seem real, the great Midwest, far from concrete and steel.
This is GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton with Matthew Curry, previewing songs from an upcoming album. Well, let's get to another song. And I can't help thinking this is about your dad, I Think of You.
Mm-hmm. This one was tough, man. This one was really hard. It's been one of those that was in the works ever since he passed away.
Huh.
Took me years and years and years to be able to put it together the way I wanted to and kind of not, you know, break down in the, you know, midst of doing it, so.
When the moonlight casts a gentle glow on the water as the river flows, I'll think of you and what we used to do. When I look up to the sky above, Can you see me? Can you feel the love I feel for you? Tell me true.
I Think of You is the name of the song. It's by Matthew Curry. He's in studio on GLT Sound Ideas. This song, Illusion of Hope, is quite a song here, Matthew.
Thank you, man.
This is a step up lyric-wise, I think, for you. But it's a dark song.
Yeah.
A pessimistic song.
Those are a lot of... Funny enough, the dark ones seem to be a lot easier to write than the uplifting, happy, or lovey-dovey type
ones. Well, this is not an optimistic song. Let me play just a little bit here, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And the people can't get enough. It's too tempting to refuse. They're deceived by the promise that they've got something to live for, nothing to lose. Every night the sun goes down.
They're deceived by the promise they have something to live for and nothing to lose. Another line, false prophets build them up with lies and ways to cope.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been reading a lot, observing a lot? What have you been doing?
Well, this one was actually a song that was put together. I wrote it with a great friend of mine and frequent collaborator, Greg Neville. This was a music idea that I had and kind of showed him. And he's telling me, he goes, man, you know, I could envision this being kind of about like the big city, you know, New York City and all the shady dealings that go on, and so we sat there and at our rehearsal space and knocked it out one night, and then when we started building the songs, and Francis, my drummer, and I started putting these big harmonies on the chorus, we're like, wow, man, this is a powerful tune. You know, it's one of my favorites. It's we'll be playing it at the Castle.
Let's go to the song On My Way, and this is a more optimistic song, so let's play a little bit of this song. Seems to be a manifesto, though, that you are going to persevere. You're on your way. This is your path, and you're not getting off.
Well, yeah, you know, I sure ain't qualified to do nothing else, so I guess I better just keep going. You know?
What's different about over the last year that was different about the year before?
The great thing about this year, as I mentioned to you earlier, I've been getting together with Greg Neville. We've really been on a roll with songwriting, and that's like a whole new high for me, because it used to be it was sit around and wait for inspiration, and we just decided we're not going to do that anymore, and we're just going to really plug away, and it's really paid off. I feel like we're getting better at it, and now it's just a matter of waiting for the right person to recognize it within the industry, and hopefully it doesn't take another 23 years.
Are you making yourself more marketable by going in this direction musically?
I hope so. I guess, you know, why we haven't got a set date on to put this stuff out that I sent you is just because I want to make sure it's, you know, our ducks are in a row before we do it. I don't want to just throw it up on Spotify to get the same 500 people to hear it. You know, I want to really find the right fit for management and hopefully a record label that can really get behind it. And it's been, you know, challenging so far because a lot of the industry is really in it for a quick buck.
Well, are you getting some good feedback from some of the record labels?
We haven't, approached a ton yet, just because it's harder than just going and knocking on their door and saying, here, listen to my music.
But you've got some good management, right?
Right now, we're just kind of, we've taken that on ourselves.
Ah, okay.
We've had so much trouble in the past with it, and we've had some people offer up their help that just didn't feel like the right fit, and I didn't want to sign any contracts that were going to hold me to something for 2 years and then me totally be regretting it after 7 months in or something, so which was sort of what happened in the past,
yeah.
I guess.
What do you need to hear from a management company that'll get you excited?
Just excitement from them. I guess we've gotten that, but just not from people who I felt that would really take us to the next level. You really do need a lot of help from folks like that in order to find the best record deal and stuff like that. I guess I don't want to just sign with somebody just to do it, you know. I want to make sure it's the right person that really believes in it and is not afraid to get down in the ditches and battle it out.
Well, what you've sent us is a great batch of songs. Great to have you in the studio again.
Well, good to see you, man. Thanks for putting up with me for the 110th time, I think it is now.
Bloomington native Matthew Curry speaking with GLT's John Norton. Curry plays his annual December show at the Castle Theater this Friday. Discover more local music and hear from artists playing in Central Illinois on the GLT Music Podcast. Find it on NPR One or your favorite podcast app.
Like a sweet surrender on my way today.
Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal. WGLT.org is where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories with help today from Mike McCurdy, from Ryan Denham, and from Melissa Liebert. You can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.